Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. When you greet a friend, you often say, "Hi, what's new?" We're taking that question literally, and what's new is the topic of today's program. You will hear news stories about a tandem bicycle group, about jail brailers, about a braille learning tool, and drops for AMD instead of shots, and a flying eye hospital. So, you ask, what's new? You'll hear information coming from, first of all, the Chicago Lighthouse. They produce a section of their website called Blindness in the News, which is a weekly collection of news stories highlighting items of interest about people who are blind, visually impaired, or have other disabilities. The headline for the article reads, "These blind New Yorkers are biking across New York City. How a bold new organization empowers people with visual impairments to experience New York City like never before." This article is by Daniel Krieger, and it comes from Narratively Magazine. It's 5 a.m. at the Peter Pan Donut and Pastry Shop in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. It's been a night much like any other, quiet and uneventful, until a group of 50 cyclists, many on two-seater tandem bikes, pulls up in front, looking like some sort of a quirky bicycle gang. They enthusiastically crowd into this small shop to make their choices among the cases of old-fashioned Krellers and Bavarian cream eclairs. Many hit the bathroom. This is one of the last stops on their annual four-borough pilgrimage. It's called the All-Night Donut Ride. The riders meet in Central Park around midnight. They went up through Harlem to the Crown Diner in the Bronx, all the way down into Manhattan to try out the 53-year-old Donut Pub's offerings, and then they cycled around the island's southern tip and over the Brooklyn Bridge to the Peter Pan Donut and Pastry Shop. They'll end up, after the sun comes up, 40 miles later at the Donut Plant in Long Island City in Queens. Oh, by the way, roughly half of those riders are blind. The ride is organized by a group called In Tandem. This is a nonprofit group that provides cycling events for people with disabilities, most of whom have a visual impairment, like Dorcas Condi, whose lack of sight has never kept her from riding. All she needs is a captain, as they call it in tandem biking, to lead the way. One of her favorite captains is James Sweeney. Together, Condi and Sweeney have circled the Central Park Loop many times, cruised around local neighborhoods like Forest Hills, Queens, and gone on outings around the city, like one last month to Grant's Tomb in Manhattan. One time, the pair even rode 100 miles for a Philly cheesesteak sandwich. On a Saturday morning in March, Condi, who is 55, lives in Woodside, Queens, and works at the VA Medical Center there, is sitting on a bench by Central Park with Sweeney, a 47-year-old chef based in Astoria, Queens. They are waiting for a bike and chatting while Condi's guide dog, whose name is Betty and is a 5-year-old golden retriever, Betty, the dog, is burying her face in Condi's lap, sensing the impending separation. Is a quote, "All right, Dorcas, let's do this," Sweeney says. He leads Dorcas to a bike, helps adjust the seat and helmet, and counts down. 3, 2, 1, and they're off. I, the author, set off alongside them. It turns out that the two can pedal faster than one. Here's a quote, "Over the course of time, people here develop friendships and they want to ride together," says Stanley Zucker. He is In Tandem's co-founder and executive director. Wearing a light blue All-Night Donut Ride t-shirt, Zucker, age 61, a semi-retired film producer, flits about with a clipboard in hand, cracking jokes and playing dispatcher as he helps riders find partners, bikes, and helmets, and he logs everyone's mileage. Last year, the group clocked about 29,000 miles. Zucker, the founder of this In Tandem group, says the pairing of captains and stokers, that's what you call the person who rides in the back seat, the pairing of these two is like a dance as they draw from a pool of who's around them at the moment. Several guide dogs sit by their owners, or wait for their return while captains, stokers, and volunteers hang out and socialize. Founded in 2013, In Tandem hosts regular rides on Saturdays and Thursday evenings, and big event rides such as the famous all-night donut ride, and the next one will be in August. There are roughly 200 captains with varying degrees of involvement and about 50 stokers who come regularly. The organization, supported by donations and corporate sponsorship, provides 25 high-end tandem bikes, as well as the training, logistical support, and anything else needed to make these rides happen. All this is for free. Zucker was there at In Tandem's inception, helping his friend Artie Elefant get it started. A decade earlier, Elefant, his name is spelled E-L-E-F-A-N-T, Elefant, who was blind, had created a New York tandem cycling program with Achilles International, which helps people with disabilities join in running events. But, explains Zucker, when Achilles ended the tandem program in 2013, Elefant decided to start up his own. It was clear to him how many people were very disappointed when it got nixed. When Elefant died of leukemia shortly before the launch, Zucker stepped in to lead in the interim, and he's still at it 4 years later. A quote, "Artie would have been a hell of a lot better director than me, believe me," Zucker says. "I shouldn't be doing this. It should be the Stokers. Besides, I'm not even a cyclist." He's a runner and volunteered for several decades for Achilles before finding himself in this very unlikely position. As Condi and Sweeney, now this is Dorcas Condi and James Sweeney, who are riding one tandem bike together, as they make their way around the Central Park Loop, I try to catch bits of their conversation. Condi asks about the shifting scenery, while Sweeney mentions the blooming trees, horses, crowded spots, and some sites for orientation, the sheep meadow, the carousel. When they get back, Betty, the guide dog, jumps up on her, giving one of those greetings dog owners live for. A quote, "I feel comfortable with James," says Condi. "We have a system. It really is in tandem. I can't just cruise along. We have to be a team and work together." That was especially necessary on their longest trip 2 years ago when they rode from Princeton to Philadelphia for a cheesesteak and then turned around and rode back. She says, "We took a very scenic route on the way back, and it was a spectacular day," recalls Condi, for whom the memory has turned bittersweet. She says, "It was one of the last rides I did when I had some sight." Not long after that, she had an accident at home and lost the partial vision that enabled her to perceive some light, color, and shapes. Now she is adjusting to living, as she says, in total darkness. Before the accident, she got around more fluidly and could enjoy some scenery with her own perception, seeing sunlight rather than just feeling it. Sweeney says he now tries to be more descriptive when they ride, keeping the stoker's perspective in mind, as any captain worth his salt would do. She says, "I've tried going to gyms to stay fit," says Condi, "but being outdoors is more fun. And with the In Tandem program, you get to meet people and socialize and interact." That's why she's ready to get back into cycling now. This summer and fall will offer opportunities for that as she continues to adjust to her life in the darkness. A quote from her, "Life goes on," she says, looking at the bright side. The next article comes from the Detroit News. The headline reads, "Inmates Learn Braille to Help Get Jobs After Prison." This was written by Michael Casey from the Associated Press. Dateline is Concord, New Hampshire. Inside a prison workshop, several inmates tap away at what look like old typewriters. The devices are actually Perkins Braillers, which are used to write the code relied upon by many visually impaired people. In a first for New Hampshire's prison system, 14 female inmates are spending much of the year learning Braille so they can convert restaurant menus, textbooks, and novels into Braille. Here's a quote, "To know I could actually do something good for somebody, that's good for me to know," said Molly Martell, who was in the fifth year of a 20 to 40 year sentence for stabbing a friend to death. The decision to bring Braille translation to the prison comes as the state readies to move to a larger women's facility at the end of the year. As part of the planned move, officials began looking for new prison classes to teach women job skills. Ron Cormier, the administrator of Correctional Industries, asked other prison systems and learned Braille transcription classes had become popular in U.S. prisons, with 27 programs for men and women. At the same time, he was hearing that there was a shortage of transcribers in the Northeast. Now, about Braille, this is created by a Frenchman named Louis Braille in the 1880s, Braille organizes dots in various patterns to form letters, numbers, and punctuation marks. Teaching Braille relies heavily on memorization. Students start by learning the Braille cell, six possible dot positions arranged in two columns. Then students move to the Brailler to learn how to write it. Eventually, they move to the computer, where they begin to transcribe words. The goal of the women is to be certified by the Library of Congress, which requires them to submit a 35-page transcribed document. Nancy Whitmer's House, who works for the Concord nonprofit called Future in Sight and is training the women, said one of the biggest challenges is that they can see. She says they are going to read it visually, so sometimes the dots start to swim in front of your eyes, said Whitmer House, who spent 15 years teaching visually impaired students Braille. Hunkered over a computer with their workbooks in hands, several women stared at a white screen filled with dots. Here's a quote, "To know that it was something that I could get certified to do when I'm home was a big draw for me," said Nicole Belonga, who was serving 15 to 30 years after being convicted of manslaughter in the death of her daughter. She says, "I'm scared. It's going to be pretty hard to get a job, and I'm not delusional about that." So also on the topic of Braille, this is about a teaching device. The headline reads, "Innovative tool allows students to learn Braille without instructors." The article was written by Dylan Furness, and it comes from Digital Trends Online Magazine. First of all, there's a picture of the device that they're going to be telling you about. It's like a desk. It fits on the desktop, and the two sides open out, so you're like a notebook-size area in the middle with the two sides opened out. And on either side and in the middle, there's little tiles with the letters on it, a letter on the top, and then the Braille equivalent underneath the letter. And then at the bottom center of this, there's a tray where you put these little tiles. And the article will tell you what that tray is for. Visually impaired students can now learn to read Braille on their own thanks to a new educational tool. This is developed by TVAR EdTech, a startup company accepted into Harvard's Innovation Labs incubation program. It's called the Read. Uses a combination of tactile and audio feedback to teach Braille alphabet to people who don't have access to teachers. Some statistics, 90% of people who are Braille literate are employed while adults. Only 33% of blind adults who do not read Braille are employed. Many don't learn Braille due to lack of resources. Realizing this, a master's degree student, Alex Tavares, looked for a new method and tool for teaching Braille that would allow students to do so autonomously. The Read is relatively simple and easy to use. It features large tiles with Braille letters, which students can arrange in the slot to form words. When a student places a tile in a slot, an audio file plays the phonetic sound of the letter. When a word is formed, the audio file will sound out the word. A 12-week trial was recently held at the Perkins School for the Blind, where students were given the opportunity to test the device. Here's a quote. "Students were extremely engaged with the Read," Tavares, the inventor, told Digital Trends. He continues, "One student who was blind and on the autism spectrum had struggled to learn the first 10 letters of the alphabet all year long. Being on the autism spectrum meant that taking traditional direct instruction was extremely challenging and left the student unable to learn Braille easily. The immediate audio feedback and exploratory platform provided by the Read device allowed the student to practice Braille with minimal guidance, and he learned the first 10 letters of the alphabet after only 2 days, and he practiced less than 20 minutes each day. Tavares, the inventor, and his team are now seeking support and funding for the Read device on Kickstarter. They hope to raise $273,000 to give the tool to 400 students. Individual devices can also be purchased for $495. This is for the Read device that allows students to learn Braille without instructors. The next article headline reads, Revolutionary Eye Drops to Treat Age-Related Blindness. This comes from www.sciencedaily.com. Scientists at the University of Birmingham in the United Kingdom have developed a type of eye drop which could potentially revolutionize the treatment of one of the leading causes of blindness in the UK. The results of this collaborative research, published in a journal called Investigative Ophthalmology and Visual Science, could spell the end of those painful injections directly into the eye used to treat the increasingly common eye disorder known as age-related macular degeneration. AMD affects more than 600,000 people in the UK, and predictions suggest that this figure could rise sharply in the future because of an aging population. And now a note from me at this point, you know this article is based in the United Kingdom, but it certainly has application in the United States. Much similar situation is here, so stay tuned on this development. This is the article continues by saying, a painless condition which causes people to gradually lose their central vision, usually in both eyes. AMD is currently treated by repeated injections into the eye on a monthly basis over at least 3 years. This is a problem because, apart from being an unpleasant procedure for patients to undergo, the injections can cause tearing and infections inside the eye, and there is an increased risk of blindness. Now, scientists led by biochemist Dr. Felicity de Kogan from the University of Birmingham's Institute of Inflammation and Aging have invented a method of delivering the injected drugs as an eye drop instead, and their laboratory research has obtained the same outcomes as the injected drug. The drop uses a cell-penetrating peptide. That's abbreviated CPP, a cell-penetrating peptide. The drops are used to deliver these CPPs are used to deliver the drug to the relevant part of the eye within minutes. Dr. De Kogan said the CPP drug has the potential to have a significant impact on the treatment of AMD by revolutionizing drug delivery options. And a quote, efficacious self-administered drug application by eye drop would lead to a significant reduction in adverse outcomes and healthcare costs compared with current treatments. The CPP drug complex also has potential application to other chronic ocular diseases that require drug delivery to the posterior chambers of the eye. We believe this is going to be very important in terms of empowering patients and reducing the cost of treatment to the National Health Service. Now, once again, a reminder, this article is from the UK, and also I have a reminder that the CPP stands for cell-penetrating peptide. This delivers drugs via eye drops rather than by injection. The next article comes from the U.S. edition of The Guardian. The headline reads, The Life-Changing Flying Eye Hospital, Treating Blindness Across the Globe. In Kitwe, the second largest city in Zambia, the young mother Vera is carrying her one-year-old daughter Rachel into the consultation room at the Eye Annex. The only dedicated pediatric eye care center in the country, the Kitwe Annex also attracts patients from the neighboring countries of Angola and Congo. Rachel is here for surgery to remove bilateral cataracts that prevent her from seeing. A few months after Rachel was born, Vera, her mother, noticed that something didn't seem right with her vision. I would move my hands in front of her face, but she would not react. I would move things past her eyes, but she would not follow them, her mother explains. The team of nurses, anesthetists, and pediatric ophthalmologists treating Rachel has been trained and are being continually supported by peers from some of the world's most respected eye hospitals who fly in on a specially adapted plane. This is called the Flying Eye Hospital, and this is thanks to an initiative of Orbis, O-R-B-I-S, Orbis, the International Blindness Prevention Charity. Here's a quote. Orbis volunteers who come to share their knowledge and give technical support are very good. Most of them have been working for a long time, so they have very good experience, says Dr. Chilesi Mboni, the pediatric ophthalmologist who's treating Rachel. And he continues, so we have some from the U.S., Great Britain, Israel, and so forth. Techniques are different around the world, so we get a mix of everything. Sharing experiences and discussing cases with the visiting Orbis medical volunteers, as he says, raises your confidence to see what you are doing is what everyone else is doing around the world, Dr. Mboni concludes. Globally, 285 million people are blind or visually impaired. And yet for 80% of them, this could be prevented with access to the right treatment, like the surgery that Dr. Mboni is able to give to Rachel. Orbis focuses its efforts in Africa, Asia, and Latin America because 90% of the world's 39 million blind people live in developing countries. Many of the conditions causing blindness, such as cataracts or trachoma, which is a very contagious bacterial infection, many of these conditions can be easily treated. The loss of sight that these conditions can cause have a huge impact, as it will impede a person's ability to gain an education, it will prevent them from finding employment, and can plunge families into a life of poverty. Anne Marie Ablett, a nurse from the University Hospital in Wales, Cardiff, has been giving up 4 weeks of her annual vacation to volunteer with Orbis since 2003. She says, "You can't change everything overnight, but you can start with one patient and help them," she says. "If everyone plays their small part together, you can make changes." Anne Marie Ablett is speaking in a terminal at Stansted Airport, and just outside is the Flying Eye Hospital, here for a short promotional visit. The white MD-10 aircraft on the tarmac looks like a typical passenger plane. In fact, this is a 46-seat classroom, complete with audiovisual equipment that transmits live surgeries that can be watched in 3D. The lead surgeon, who is just next door, in a state-of-the-art operating theater, can be asked questions throughout the procedure. The aircraft, donated by FedEx, also features pre- and post-op spaces and a laser suite. Orbis's main aim is to train eye care teams and strengthen hospitals in the 92 countries where it works. It's for this reason that Ablett first chose to volunteer. She says, "We're not in the developing country just for numbers. We're there to teach, so that means we do less surgeries. But when we fly off to the next country, the local doctors have got the skills to treat their own patients because they were trained by us." Dr. Jonathan Lord, who is the global medical director for Orbis, went from being a regular volunteer to giving up his position as a consultant at Moorfields Eye Hospital in London and became a staff member for the charity before being promoted to his current role. "I was hooked after my first trip," he says. "Seeing the Flying Eye Hospital work in real life, in the field, with the patients being treated on the plane, and that treatment being part of a really comprehensive training package that is upskilling all the groups of staff that are needed for each surgery, all this is amazing. The need round the world is huge. You realize the magnitude when you look at some of the statistics. In Ethiopia, there is a population of over 80 million, but until recently, there was only a little over 80 ophthalmologists practicing in the whole country." He continues by saying, "When I left Moorfields Eye Hospital, it had 150 doctors covering just the catchment area of London." This article now has a picture of the Flying Hospital's recovery room. I'll describe it to you. It shows two typical hospital beds side by side, but in the beds are two big, fluffy, beige-colored teddy bears. Each one is wearing a bright turquoise T-shirt, and it's covered up with a cozy blanket. Each teddy bear is proudly wearing a white patch on one of its eyes. The article continues by saying programs usually last 2 weeks and require a lot of pre-planning with a team from Orbis flying in ahead of time to consult on what would be most helpful to the healthcare professionals in that country. The plane will land at a local airport and the team of local surgeons, nurses, and anesthetists board the plane to join their volunteer counterparts. Meanwhile, another team of volunteers will go to the local hospital to provide training using the equipment in situ. At the end of the week, the teams swap. Becoming hooked after stepping foot on the plane is a running theme among the staff and volunteers, including the pilots. They are all FedEx employees who volunteer their time. Gary Dyson, who has been involved since 2001, says, "On my first trip, which was to China, I saw a child who couldn't see on Monday, but could see on Wednesday. It's such a life-changing event for them. For Rachel, the short surgery will have undoubtedly that same effect. As Dr. Mboni removes the patches from her eyes, she blinks a few times and waves her hand in front of her eyes before looking up and seeing her mother for the very first time." News is spreading across Zambia of successes like this, Dr. Mboni says. People know we can act fast, so they are telling patients with eye conditions, "Got a problem? Go to Kitwe Central Hospital." And now just a quick note from Philly Magazine about a golfer. For South Jersey's Mario Tobia, the president of the Middle Atlantic Blind Golf Association, vision is overrated. Tobia is the top-ranked blind golfer in the country. Booming drives that travel more than 200 yards off the tee and sinking birdie putts that would impress any scratch golfer paired with him in a foursome. As part of the MABGA, Tobia and more than 100 other blind golfers compete in tournaments at 35 courses within a 75-mile radius of the Philadelphia area. Being the top blind golfer in the U.S. also allows Tobia to travel the country to play in larger national events like the Guiding Eyes Classic, which is the Masters of Blind Golf. This was held in June of this year at Mount Kisco in Westchester County, New York. Tobia is 61 years old. He has racked up a total of 11 tournament wins, and he is now focusing on one day being crowned the world champion. Well, here's a quote for you to think about. Success in golf depends less on strength of body, but more on strength of mind and character. This was said by Arnold Palmer, an American professional golfer, who is generally regarded as one of the greatest and most charismatic players in the sport's history. He was born in 1929 in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and died just last September in Pittsburgh. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.